On the show today, we have Ryan Brinks, publisher of Banking and Investing, talking about their new study, Digital versus Traditional Banking, What Do Americans Prefer? Check it out. Hey everybody, Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome to our show. And on today's program, we have Mr. Ryan Brinks, publisher of Banking and Investing. Ryan, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. Happy holidays to you and your crew there. So hope you guys are in the swing of things.
We are. We're getting ready.
All righty. Good deal. Hey, also something else pretty cool here. You guys did a study on digital versus traditional banking. What do Americans prefer? And so this kind of caught my eye. I went, I wonder what Americans do prefer. And you guys found out. So, but to set the stage on the study, who did you guys talk to regarding the study? Just regular American folks running around and about, or who was it?
Yeah, so we partner with an organization that does the study.
Okay.
And we basically interviewed 2,000 people. And kind of the focus of it was if they had a digital or mobile only bank account or were considering getting one.
Okay.
That was the primary focus. Yep.
Gotcha. Yeah, you're talking about, I mean, neobanks, all that type of stuff. So, but to step back, why did you guys conduct it? You're just kind of getting a gauge on what's going on in the public out there, or?
Yeah, so we compare all kinds of accounts, and what we've been seeing is a lot of these newer fintech banking products popping up. Obviously, the world is moving towards a mobile first in almost everything that mm-hmm. we do. And so we're seeing that that's happening in banking as well. And so people are trying out mobile only products.
Oh yeah.
And there's more and more on the market. And so we wanted to gauge basically what people's feelings were and what they were gravitating mm-hmm. towards.
Well, and it's getting better and better too. So, I mean, I mean, 10 years ago, it was basically non-existent, but each year, it ensues, it just gets better and better. And so there's a lot of them out there right now too. So let's get to the crux of it here. I mean, how many Americans are banking digitally? What'd you guys find out?
Yeah, let me pull up the results there.
Sure.
We found out that, so 60% of millennials, we broke it down by the generations.
Oh, okay.
That's primarily where you're going to see the difference. But across all the generations, the majority of people are using or planning to use digital-only banking. And obviously, the younger the crowd, the higher the percentage. So millennials, 60% of them are. Generation X is at 54%. Baby boomers actually are at 56%, so they're right in the mix of things too.
Wow. Okay. So it's almost generation agnostic, it sounds like, because everybody wants that convenience. And so this is what these online banks or neobanks, you guys are calling them, are. And so who are some of these banks? I mean, I know there's Chime out there. I see a ton of commercials with Chime. Obviously SoFi's been around for a little bit now. What are some other neobanks out there? Movin's another one, Simple.
Yeah, Simple is one of them. There really are quite a few, and it's hard to keep track of them.
I know. They're popping up everywhere.
Right.
So I mean, I also think, like, I just saw the other day that SoFi is now is the name on the new Los Angeles Rams football stadium. So it's going to be like SoFi Stadium. So they're moving and shaking things up a little bit. Sounds like.
Yeah. Aspiration is another one.
Okay.
And we're also seeing Motive Money. I'm just looking at some of these. We're also seeing a lot of the brokerages, so Robinhood, Wealthfront is a robo-advisor. They're getting into mobile banking.
Oh, wow.
Along with Betterment and some of the other, mm-hmm. other investing-focused providers.
Gotcha. So why are they starting to plan? Why are they started or they plan to bank digitally? What's going on here? Why are these folks planning on banking digitally? Is it just the convenience factor of it, or is there something else out there?
I would say that there's two primary reasons. One is the convenience. It's you know, it's built for mobile.
Mm-hmm.
People are moving in that direction. The other thing I think is simplicity. Traditional banks, I think the story of the overdraft fee kind of epitomizes the simplicity and the complexity, if you want to contrast it that way.
Yeah.
Where traditional banks, you know, there's a saying in the investing world that money flows to where it's treated best. And I think if you keep slapping people's wrists with this fee and that fee and the other fee, or monthly fees or requirements in order to earn interest on your money.
Right.
You know, people are looking to simplify. I just want my money to grow. I want transfers to be easy. I want to do what I want to do with my money without the hassle of jumping through hoops and doing other things. And I think these newer players are making it really simple, and they're offering competitive rates without the fees, and it's attractive.
Right. And I mean, that's kind of like the, what, you know, the Uberization of everything, you know, because I mean, obviously Uber and Lyft really turned the taxi industry on its ear. And so, Airbnb is really turning the, you know, the hotel industry, like, oh my gosh, you know, what's going on? So it's the same thing here with the banking industry, that some of these neobanks are really turning the industry on its ear because of like just what you said, the simplification of it all. So why are some Americans, why aren't they banking digitally? Let's look at the other side of the coin.
Yeah. I think education or complacency is the big one there. There's not enough incentive for some people to switch. And that just depends on their perspective. It depends on their habits, their routines,
right,
that kind of a thing.
Right.
So of that minority that aren't jumping on board yet, that inertia hasn't kicked in and given them a good enough reason.
Right.
To switch.
Right. Yeah, and sometimes it's hard to switch. I mean, if you've been with a financial institution for 20 or 30 years, you know, it's like, it's really hard to change, like you said, those habits. You know, it's like, I'm used to this. I know where to transfer money. I know where this is going, where that's going. You have all of your bill pay all set up and all that type of stuff. So it's like, I don't want to rock the boat that much, but there's that other convenience factor that we're all looking for. So,
and the other thing I would say is that very core to the banking experience is trust, and it's not it's a step of faith to trust somebody else with your money, and your financial life, and so, you know, I think that's a part of it too, and some of these new banks, neobanks, they have to earn that trust.
Indeed, and I think the longer they're around, the more successful they will be at earning that trust. And I think SoFi is one of the ones that are, like I said, they're really making some strides in that area. So as convenience becomes the currency buyers covet the most, so will traditional institutions, will they be able to keep up with this? Are they going to kind of create their own kind of, you know, online banks? I mean, a lot of them are kind of going in that direction, I would think.
Yeah, and we're starting to see that for sure. Some of the more established banks are doing things to cut away their fees or doing things to be competitive. You have Citibank. You know, very few of those big banks are offering the competitive, you know, 2% plus interest rates on savings accounts.
Yeah.
But Citibank is doing that with its Accelerate Savings.
Huh.
You have Discover that is wiping away, you know, Discover maybe isn't a traditional bank in the sense, but it's a very well-known, very established company.
Mm-hmm.
They're wiping away fees and making it very simple, you know, on the checking and the debit card side of things. So we're definitely seeing movement in that direction. And you mentioned Chime was the first kind of neobank that gain trust, and they're hitting new records.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
We're seeing them on the news. Their valuation is now at record highs, and so that is happening, and I think the rest of the banking world is moving in that direction to catch up.
Yeah, well, they're seeing what's works, and a lot of that stuff that they're doing is working and driving their customers, or in credit unions' cases, their members, over to those other things. They're like, oh, wait a minute, maybe we have to, you know, pivot here a little bit and adapt and adopt and all that type of stuff to keep our customer, keep the consumers where they are. So that seems like what's happening right now.
Yeah, and I think there are, we've reviewed some credit unions too, and there are definitely ones like Consumers Credit Union offering a 5% interest checking. Wow. And that's definitely catching people's eyes. Yeah. But again, I think to balance that, sometimes the hoops that you have to jump through by making 12 or whatever debit card transactions, sometimes that goes back to the simplicity argument. That may not meet the needs of a large swath of it might be great for some people, but right. Others might be looking for the simplicity.
Yeah. I think that's what we're all looking for these days, for sure. So what can financial institutions learn from your study? What can banks and credit unions glean from it and go, hey, you know what, maybe we should make these changes if we want to continue to be successful?
Yeah, I mean, when is listening closely to your customer ever a bad strategy?
That's true.
I think just continuing to iterate and continuing to find ways to meet, you know, customers' needs and keep up with the competition. And educating customers, I think, like you said, if there's no reason for them to switch to a better product, mm-hmm. You know, sometimes the education can put people over. Educating both good and bad, like, you know, if there are problems with these neobanks, that needs to come out and be talked about, what to watch out for.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, you know, definitely move in the direction of meeting some of those needs. You know, as kind of from a consumer standpoint, one of the things I think of when it comes, maybe not so much to checking accounts, but to savings accounts, is if you're offering an interest rate that's less than inflation, you're essentially losing money.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think people are maybe beginning to wake up to that reality. Providing what people are looking for.
Indeed.
In a way that they can still trust you, and obviously you can still do business.
Indeed. Last question here before we let you get going. Where can folks find out more details on this study? Where do they go? Where do they go check it out?
Yep, we've got it published at finder.com.
Okay.
/ neobank /adoption.
Okay.
And you can check it out there. We've got all the statistics and our methodology and everything laid out there for you.
Right on. All right. We'll put that link in the show notes so folks can get right to it and check it out and give you guys a call if they have any further questions. So good stuff, Ryan. This is really good information. I think a lot of us can certainly use and use going into 2020 as well. This is going to be another big year, I think. So good stuff, sir. Any final words of wisdom to wrap up?
No, I think, just keep watching the landscape. Keep, you know, comparing what's out there. And there's a lot of new stuff going on, a lot of changes. And it's always good to stay up on that.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, it's moving super fast. Super fast indeed. All right, Ryan, thanks again. Appreciate the time. Everybody, Ryan Brinks, publisher of Banking and Investing. Thanks for the information, man. That was good stuff.